According to Giles Brandreth, prolific British writer, Scrabble expert, former Member of Parliament, and past European Monopoly champion, the average person speaks 860,341,500 words in their lifetime. He was so sure that this number was spot on that he used it for the subtitle of his 1980 book, The Joy of Lex, How to Have Fun with 860,341,500 Words. I find his confidence, as evidenced by the apparent precision of his number, astonishing. I would be tempted to round to the nearest 10 million. I also find his total a bit disturbing. Considering how chatty I've been all my life, just ask my wife, I wonder if I may have actually died several years ago. Mr. Brandreth's calculation got me wondering not only about quantity, but about value. Of the 860 million words we speak, give or take, how many have profound meaning and effect? How many, or how few, words does it take to change the course of a person's life? In the spring of 1976, I was flunking sophomore English in high school. Really flunking. It wasn't even that close. I blame this on my tendency to follow the wrong crowd, as well as my attraction to a certain, shall we say, herb. But that's another story. Anyway, the fateful day came when my final grade was to be delivered to me, and while there was obvious dread, there was little mystery. Out in the hallway, away from the staring eyes of my classmates, I sat on one side of a folding table while my teacher, my executioner, sat across from me. The hallway was empty and dimly lit and somber, and far off I heard the metal door to a locker slam shut and then the clicking footsteps fading away. My teacher, Miss B, had my records in front of her. She turned the top paper toward me so I could see it and said plainly, "This is what you earned." And then she let that sixth letter of the alphabet sink in for a few moments. Then she put my records down on the floor and slid a second piece of paper face down across the table toward me with both of her hands. I reached out with both of my hands and pressed them against the page. For a few moments, my future hung trapped in tension, and before she released her hands, Miss B looked right at me and said, "But this is what I'm giving you." She let go, and I pulled the paper across the table and turned it over. And there it was, a bright, shiny D, a passing grade. I looked up at her, biting my lip a little, and she leaned in toward me and quietly said just four words, "You're better than that." I've been a professional writer for the last 35 years. Today's story is another tale of the wonder and power that just a few words can have. It's titled, My Grandmother's Hands. It's a cold October. Crouching in the dim and dusty attic of our family home, stretching out my hands, feeling deep under the eaves blindly through the cobwebs, my fingers alight on the edge of a long-forgotten cardboard box. Into the box my fingers creep, and there, so far from me, my fingertips touch something hard and smooth and cool, like stone. And it's suddenly familiar. Something touched long ago, and my fingers think back and remember, and I disappear. I'm 8 years old again, and it's no longer autumn. It's summer, and I'm running barefoot down the mossy path under the soaring pines toward the boathouse that hangs out beyond the shore of the lake, cantilevered over the still water. Then one, two, three, up the quick steps I run, and I burst in through the creaking door, and there she is, my grandmother. Her studio is warm and still, and the low western light slants in over the water and under the pine boughs, and dust motes foxtrot in the golden balsam air. The room smells of old wood and of wool and of thyme and of clay. Always of clay, the sweet, soft, organic perfume of the clay pulled out of the living earth. At the clay, my grandmother, the sculptor, works, and the work fascinates me. Her hands fascinate me. Her fingers fascinate me. I stare at them as they move, so soft, yet so strong, like velvet stretched over iron. Pushing, pinching, and forming, her fingertips following the silent directions of her eyes that look through the surface of the clay, slowly revealing what she already sees beneath. I crouch transfixed, at once as an adult in my attic, with my hands under the eaves touching a statue my grandmother sculpted in the 1960s, and at the same time as a small boy in the heart of a long-ago Adirondack August. I feel the gentle lake licking at the floorboards beneath my feet, hear the slight knock of a canoe tied loosely to the dock, the distant cronk of a bullfrog, and I can't take my eyes off my grandmother's hands as they sweep and punctuate and encourage, conducting new life into the clay. She smiles and beckons with her eyes. "Come and sit," she says. Then I'm up, scrambling onto the stool, and my grandmother is standing behind me, and we're watching this magical thing that her hands have been forming, my eyes roaming over the fruitful furrows of her imagination. "Tell me what you see," she asks quietly, but I hesitate, uncertain. Outside, in the shallows, among the reeds, the blue damselflies flit in the sunlight, while the silver sparkle of the reflected lake dances up through cracks in the floor, glittering firelight on the wall. "I'm not sure what I see," I finally say to her. "Close your eyes," my grandmother tells me. Then she steps close behind me, and the folds of her smock brush against my back, and she reaches her hands around my face, her fingertips alighting on my fallen eyelids as butterflies. Her skin is cool and soft, and the aroma of the clay on her fingers is rich in my nose, as if my grandmother were connected to the very earth. She leans in and burrows her face down through the curls of my hair, and I feel the warmth of her lips against my ear. Her lips move, and I hear the words, but she doesn't just speak them. She breathes the words into me, but not only the words, but along with the words, the idea behind the words, the notion that perceiving and understanding and believing is more than just seeing, and that even sight itself can be found beyond our eyes. And in the next few moments, she changes forever the way I will look at and explore the world. "Stretch out your hands, Peter," she whispers. "Touch the clay and tell me what you see." Thank you for listening to this episode of the Dad Story Project podcast. If you would like to show your support, please give us a good rating and leave a review wherever you listen to your podcasts. To learn more about the Dad Story Project, download stories, and find out how you may be able to participate, please visit thedadstoryproject.com. And please like us on Facebook and tell your family and friends. Until next time, bye for now.